This is Progressive Radio, a weekly conversation hosted by Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine, a leading voice for peace and social justice. For more information about Progressive Radio or The Progressive Magazine, log on to our website at progressive.org.
I'm Matt Rothschild, and welcome to Progressive Radio, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. Today, I'm really delighted to have in the studio with me Benjamin Bush, the author of a powerful memoir called Dust to Dust. It's not your typical memoir. It's part a war chronicle, part a reflection of childhood, part an existential meditation, part a poignant love letter to his parents, actually. Benjamin Bush, welcome to Progressive Radio.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a real pleasure to be here.
I don't know if you'd describe the book that way. How would you describe it?
I'm not sure. I think it's an eye into my soul and my eye looking back out at our place in the world and in the galaxy in some ways. I think it's a book of just me yelling at the universe and hoping that someone else will stand and yell with me.
Well, I was listening anyway and found it a very interesting kind of yell. I want to start just with a few biographical questions. Your father was kind of a famous writer. Why did you decide to finally pick up his tools here?
I think, honestly, my hands were forced. I never thought that I would write a book. And I think his great shadow, in some ways, wasn't so much a deterrent as it was we were very different people. And I felt that that was his instrument, which it was. And I was a visual artist. So most of my work has always been in film and photography and drawing and printmaking and sculpture. I was a stonemason. So I felt that my expression would certainly come as a visual one. And when I was in Iraq, I was kind of denied my visual tools. I had to use a language to describe my situation, and so I had to write home once a month. And I think that's when my voice came, because I had to use language as my art. And I still, you know, I believe in the book as well. You know, you feel the sense that it's a visual artist writing in some ways.
Well, very much so, and you can even see it on the table of contents and the title of the chapters, because they're such elemental titles. You've got dust and stone and ash and water and bone and metal, these very tough nouns that are, except for metal, you know, we're here eternally.
Yeah, well, I wanted to construct a memoir in an entirely new way. I didn't want to use the conventional linear chronological examination of a family or of myself that way. I wanted to really replicate in some ways the way we remember. It's very much about memory and the power of memory, and also what you keep that is in some ways enduring. And the discoveries I made, the revelatory, I guess, discoveries I made were that I could restore my parents after I'd lost them. I could restore my childhood, which I'm a product of very much, and I carry very actively in me. And I didn't realize the extent that I did until I really, went into my memory.
Yeah, childhood keeps coming back and back in this book. It's quite interesting.
It does. Every chapter begins with childhood and moves chronologically along these themes, you know, whether they are soil or stone or blood, the last chapter necessarily being ash, because what else would you end with but ash?
Especially in a book called Dust to Dust.
Yeah. So, yeah, I tried to build chapters which were based around these elemental themes, and I went back in my memory along these themes and found that that's kind of how memories came to me.
You say at the very beginning, the first sentence of the first chapter, that your parents didn't want you playing with guns, that they were Vietnam War protesters, and yet you wanted to be a soldier as a kid. A lot of people want to be soldiers as kids, play in Fords, play with guns. But you pursued that.
I did. And strangely enough, I pursued it directly after being a studio art major at Vassar College.
Yeah, I was going to say, you didn't go the West Point route, that's for sure.
No. I think my parents thought I had finally gotten past that phase somehow by immersing myself in, you know, a serious examination of the arts. And I was always those two creatures, this one which had a martial impulse and one which was this recorder. You know, I was a great observer of my environment. That's where my enthusiasm really came from, was an endless fascination for what was all around me, stone and trees and and water, these things which we kind of take as constants in our life. And I, as a child, believed them to all be constant, permanent. My quest always was for permanence. And I found that's why I ended up being a stonemason, I think, is that when I was in various places and I saw things that had endured time, they were made of stone. So I thought in my youth, well, then stone will be the thing I use.
But there's so much that is about dissolution, about impermanence, about fading, about ruins. Yes. The poem Ozymandias was roaming through my head as I was reading this. As you know, you're coming over physical ruins, empire ruins. And so there is that sense of impermanence. Interesting that you do stonemasonry, even with this haunting impermanence that obviously was in your mind.
That's the great betrayal. The great betrayal is realization, always. And it conflicts always with the magical belief of childhood. And I believed that stone was this great permanent thing. How we make our idols out of stone. There is this preservationist, this idea that something will endure long beyond anything else, and it would be stone. And then, of course, I end up in a desert, which is sand. And sand and dust are the product of mountains. And how could mountains become sand if they are these things which are, you know, perpetual? And that's when I had to use childhood to protect myself.
I mean, even in childhood, you noticed, I think you were in London, you were climbing some stairs of a cathedral or something.
Right.
And you noticed that, or your parents pointed out to you, there was some indentation in the stone stairs, and you wonder what that was about. And your parents said that that was from so many people walking on that stone, and it had imprinted on your memory.
It did, yeah. All these things, I think it's kind of fascinating to trace the things that imprint. These small discoveries, you kind of list them as you go along if you're paying attention. And I was paying attention to certain things. And one of them very much was my environment. And so these details were things that I always recorded.
I'm Matt Rothschild. You're listening to Progressive Radio. I'm the editor at the Progressive Magazine. And delighted to have in the studio with me today Benjamin Bush, the author of this fascinating memoir, you can call it that, existential, philosophical rumination, war chronicle, called Dust to Dust. I'd like you just to read a little bit about, and this isn't at the beginning, but it's about, in a sense, the beginning, when you decide to become a soldier and tell your parents that you're going to enlist as a Marine, and I can't imagine that was a thrilling thing for them.
It was a surprise. I guess I could say that. It's all parents come to visit their children at college, and it's kind of the exciting time where you feel your way around future. They begin to ask those questions as you are exposed to new things. And this is a piece later on from the chapter Blood, a little ominous sounding, but there's a reason for it. And I'll just read a small piece. My parents came to visit me at school near the end of my junior year and took me out to lunch. My father asked me questions about classes, and my mother asked me about my plans. She always carried a calendar and obsessed over exactly what was happening and when. I said, rather casually, that I would be spending the summer at officer candidate school. My mother asked if it was some kind of a corporate training program, and I replied that it did have Corps in it. I told them about signing up to be evaluated by the Marines, and there followed the longest silence in parenthood. My father had stopped chewing, eyebrows raised almost over his forehead, and stared at me as if I had spoken well of Hitler. My mother took a deep breath, her hands clamped on the edge of the table as if she were watching an accident happen in the street. Her father had been a Marine, had gone to war, and almost not come back. I'd said it was no big deal. If I graduated from the program, I was not committed to joining the Marines. I was further interrogated about the contract, and then they left for what must have been the longest and terrible drive back to Sherburne.
That's Benjamin Bush reading from Dust to Dust. And I think you say elsewhere in the book that she cried, or your dad told you that she cried all the way home.
She did, yeah. Oof.
You didn't have to, after that summer program, enlist, but you decided to. Why?
I think that sense of duty, that sense also of those, what we can only say are these pure ideas we have in our youth about service and about also adventure. You know, I was always, as you can see through the book, following bad ideas with enthusiasm and crossing that line where safety met danger. And there was something always pulling at me to find out who I might be if everything were at stake. And the Marines were going to present that with the most direct route, I think, in some ways.
To the nth power, maybe. I mean, that's, I suppose, what Marine life is. One of the attractions of being a Marine. You talk about the training there. To me, I was, you know, I'm a peace activist person, and I couldn't help but be struck by some of the dehumanization that goes on during training. You talk about this film that they showed of lieutenants in Vietnam being killed in one disfigured corpse after another.
And that was to scare us away. They didn't want people who couldn't handle that kind of truth, even though it was removed from us. These were, you know, this was slides. They weren't actual physical bodies in front of us. But that was part of the evaluation when they still had the ability to thin the herd. And, you know, if you couldn't take that as your potential future, then the Marine Corps wasn't for you.
And they made sure that you knew that was your potential future. They said, yes, there's a bullet waiting for every one of you. That's,
and it's up to the enemy to miss.
Well, I beg your pardon?
And it's up to the enemy to miss. Oh. Yeah. So, yeah, the randomness of death, although it was never really the thing that we focused on, because we were focusing on our prowess. We were focusing on how to become, in some ways, invulnerable by skill, which is make-believe. You know, you learn certain skills. You learn how to perfect certain techniques and strategies. But really, what I discovered in Iraq was when the bullet comes, it just finds you. It doesn't matter how well your techniques have been executed. There's someone else who is hunting you as well. And, you know, especially in Iraq, where it was an environment of IEDs, improvised explosive devices, were just erupting everywhere. And we had to be in that environment. There wasn't a place we could be elsewhere.
And you write about seeing a couple of your Marines very badly injured in a couple of these IEDs. One was an IED, I think, and one was a rocket-propelled grenade. I don't know how you managed to... How did you manage just to keep going?
Well, you know, my good friend was killed in front of me. And there is no response to these things. I think the realization that I came to was in my first deployment. I was a commanding officer of a light armor reconnaissance unit, and we were sent forward through Nasiriyah to the Iranian border, where everyone immediately stopped caring what we were doing. And I was creating village councils. I was rebuilding what I thought would be something sustainable if the Iraqis chose to choose that kind of arrangement. And I disappeared into the role of what my Marines expected of me, which was that I was invulnerable, enough that I believed my own myth. I believed that I couldn't be killed in my first deployment. I wasn't careless, but I immersed into that idea that I was invulnerable. And in my second tour, I was wounded within my first 2 weeks, a very different situation. Ramadi was just a flame with insurgency and with jihadists and with al-Qaeda in Iraq and with criminals. And all these ideas that I thought that I could apply to a city, which was, if you can understand a city, then you can communicate with it. This was an incomprehensible city. And I was so convinced that I would be killed in my second tour that it created exactly the same lack of anxiety. In some ways, being immortal and being doomed created no fear.
What was the injury?
I was just wounded in the arm. I had a piece of metal blown through a truck that wounded a number of other people much worse. And it was dressed every day, and eventually it healed and I moved on. But it was like that every day. We had 27 killed. We had 140 wounded in a small piece of city in 7 months. And that sense that we were doomed and incapable of protecting ourselves, despite the fact that we were these incredibly professionally trained warriors, was the reveal of war. It's the part that they don't put into films, you know.
And is that that's the reveal of every war, you think?
It has to be. Mm-hmm. It has to be. There's a very strange sense, I think, in the idea of going to war, that the excitement, of course, of this great risk, and then the realization of what risk truly is, about your part in it. And I really think, you know, that's the shocking thing to a lot of Marines, is that we're so focused on being, in some ways, these, you know, perfect warriors. Mm-hmm. And we commit entirely to training to that. And in war doesn't care.
That is a theme that comes out loud and clear in this book of yours. Benjamin Bush is my guest today on Progressive Radio. The book is Dust to Dust, and in a way that's an echo of Chris Hedges' War is a Thing That Gives Life Meaning, a big anti-war book that is quite interesting. I'm wondering, you said you went with, for the sense of adventure, which you've been talking about, and also for the pure ideas of it or ideals of it. I wonder what you make of the Iraq War. In retrospect, you write in Dust to Dust that at home my war was not popular. It was deemed by the evidence to be unjustified and unjust war. Deemed by is, you know, you're a writer, that's passive. I'm wondering if that's your view of it too.
Well, you know, I was sent to secure weapons of mass destruction from Saddam Hussein, who was going to cooperate with terrorists, and we eventually found no weapons of mass destruction. We found him in a hole writing letters to his lieutenants to not cooperate with terrorists. So I guess if that's the war we went for, then it would be difficult to justify.
And was that sense of I've been duped present when you were there and present among others in your group?
Well, you know, the interesting thing about politics and the military is this. I think that the military is in every way moved by politics. It's a tool of politics, but it isn't a political organization. Marines don't make wars. You know, we're sent to them. And we have to assume that the electorate that sends us is either enthusiastic or complacent in our danger. We go forth in our name collectively. We go forth for America. These are ideas that we believe in. We've gone against people like Hitler, who couldn't be reasoned with, and I think were met with the proper response. However, we've gone to a lot of places in our history, and I think many of them have been sullied by corporate interests, by personal vendettas, by various other things that we can't entirely apply to the nation. And what I found discouraging, more than the problems with the war itself, was the complacency that I found when I returned, the passive nature of our electorate to allow these to continue despite the fact that we have learned the mistakes of the war's beginning. And by changing the nature of how we describe the war, didn't change the fact that we were dying there, and that America was, in some ways, fairly comfortable allowing that to continue without protest. I mean, I'm not saying there weren't protesters. There always were. My parents were protesting it, but they supported me.
So they were protesting it while you were there?
Yes, as was my wife.
When you returned, were you struck by the fact, I'm speaking with Benjamin Bush, the author of Dust to Dust, by the fact that for the vast majority of Americans, it was as if the war wasn't going on, unless you had a loved
one
over
that.
There?
We felt that very much. I mean, a lot of people say we support the troops. You see this bumper stickers, and I think they're worth exactly that in some ways. What they would say is, you know, we're supporting the troops, but they were supporting the war in some ways. They didn't stop it. They didn't vote it out. They didn't ask for referendums, didn't demand them. And I think unless you really take something from modern America, from their house, like take their TV away and say this is because of the war, we don't notice it. If we don't take your SUV, you kind of forget that there is anything at stake. That there's I think we've lost a national sense of consequence, in a way, which has left people who are committed to our best impulses, which are many times our service members, doing the bidding of an entity we don't even know. We're not sure exactly where this mission comes from, because we believe in mission. We're mission oriented in the military.
So that must be very disorienting to the soldier, to the Marine.
Well, what we do is we end up focusing on what we are, which is a unit. And we rebuild America within our small units. And my company was America to me. And we happened to be in Iraq at a time, but we preserved our humanity. We preserved and supported each other. We understood our situation. And since our return, I think, you know, we've communicated some of that. There's a disappointment in doing something which is not considered noble, which is what we joined for. And I think that's, you know, my, as you read my book, of course, my urge for knighthood when I was very young is really manifest in joining the Marine Corps. It was a knight that I could be. And there was a hope for nobility in that.
The book is Dust to Dust. The author, my guest today, Benjamin Bush. I'm Matt Rothschild. You're listening to Progressive Radio. I'm the editor at the Progressive Magazine. You write about the pointlessness, ultimately, of the Iraq War. And there's this one line that stuck in my mind, and I wrote down this piece of paper I'm reading from, and about the faces of the people left to live in the violence we had brought with us or drawn to us. Those faces seem to haunt you.
Well, you know, we were immersed into a civilian battlefield. And when that happens, everything around you is going to be a collateral damage of some kind, where we are fighting through villages and homes. And this is where children live. You know, children born into war will know nothing in some ways of their childhood. I'm writing about my childhood. These kids are growing up in a war. That's what their memories are going to be based on.
It's interesting. One thing that struck me was you liked to play with guns as a kid and war toys, and you wrote that you had to take the war toys away from the Iraqi kids because they might be mistaken by U.S. soldiers and Marines as real toys, and then you'd have to kill those kids.
Exactly. That's the thing, is that my imagination in youth that was imagining the war that I found myself in was denying that same imagination from children who are actually living in a battlefield. I thought that was, I don't even know if it's irony is the right word for it, but...
There's a shocking juxtaposition in any event.
Yeah.
I want to leave the battlefield here, because the book Dust to Dust is so much more than a war chronicle, because one of the things that I found so profound about it was the existential wrestling match you have in here. And, you know, you write a lot of, you have got Dust and Ashes and Bone as titles of chapters. You write about the dust of bones in the air, or fecal matter in the air for that matter, and the percentages of it in various places. But you really wrestle with our reason for being here. And if you wanted to read a passage about that, I think that would be illuminating.
I'll read a short piece from the chapter Bone. And this is me walking essentially on a beach while I was still in the Marines down at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. And it begins there in some ways. In the disintegration of larger things, there were fragments of ribs and other bones that were smooth and looked as if they had been sculpted from graphite. I had no idea what they had come from, but I kept a few as I walked the beach. The ocean had forever been full of predators, and the land was composed of the dead. I had been on both sides of the shore, wading in from one and crawling in from the other. Life began there. I knew that the world was wearing down, and that what was worn off was piling up. I wanted it to be imbalanced in favor of piles, the cumulative somehow increasing more quickly than the reductive, the earth expanding, our work contributing to a rise in the land. To think this way, you can never visit the shores of the sea where the collision of mass is so visible. The solidity of rock can be seen being randomly damaged, the violence of water so continuous, the planet's instability revealed to be obvious, and we are content only because we live lives too short to register the speed of ruin. We tread on the dead, some so long on the earth as to have become stone, but we only think of the few we have buried, the ones we have witnessed being buried. Every time I dig, I expect to find bones, but I know that the rest of us becomes unremarkable, reduced to fertile dirt. Our skulls emptied of all our wonder, and our hollowed eyes unable to be amazed by the absolute dark of the underground, unable to remember or to be afraid.
That intense passage is from Dust to Dust, this book we're talking about, and the reader of that was the author of that book and that passage, Benjamin Bush. The speed of ruin. There is a phrase that's going to stick in my head a while. This sense of wanting to do something that lasts, and that comes out again in that passage too. It's something that your father had, and you talk about that in the very last paragraph of the epilogue. My father feared both the insignificance of his prose and death, one not more than the other. And then you have this astonishing line. It is the living task of every artist to suffer the constant premonition of death while drawing plans for immortality. I'm struck by that because you're so cognizant of the fact that immortality is impossible. So then why strive for it?
Because I'm defiant. I think that's what we are in life. We defy the fact that we are brief, that we are insignificant, that our lives would otherwise be somehow on a larger scale considered insignificant. I'm defiant of that. And despite the evidence that I am, like all, a mortal creature, I still want to give myself the edge.
You may not win that, though.
We'll see.
All right.
I wrote a book.
You did. And we're here speaking about it. And the book is Dust to Dust. I was moved, very moved, by the ending where, and this is an alert for spoiler alert, suspense alert, but though you talked about it at the beginning, that your parents die at the end here. And you have a passage about your father of being very concerned about you being a soldier, you being a Marine, but not worrying about himself and not telling you to worry about him dying. How did it hit you, his death?
By complete surprise. And I think that's very much what this book is about, is that we imprint in youth the idea that our parents are immortal to us and that they will always be there. Despite my age, I still believed in some way. The child that remains strong in our soul can't conceive of the idea that parents could be gone. I mean, try to tell a six-year-old child that their parents are just going to die. And they will look at you as if you are insane, because to you, to them, that idea is insane. It's lunacy. And I think some of that is preserved. It imprints so strongly on us that as, a 30-whatever I was at the time when my father died, I disbelieved his death almost immediately. As I stood with his body, I didn't believe, because the child refused.
These are the kind of the intense themes, rich, powerful, deep themes that you, if you've been listening to the show, will be able to grapple with. If you read the book, Dust to Dust, we're out of time, unfortunately. My guest has been the author, Benjamin Bush. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Today's program is available online at progressive.org. You can also write to us at 409 East Main Street, Madison, Wisconsin, 53703. Our music is by Mufa. Progressive Radio is produced by Elizabeth DiNovella and engineered at Audio for the Arts in Madison.